Welcome to the Advanced Sports Analytics Show here on Roto Grinders, brought to you by Jock Market. Stop throwing your money away. It's time to check out Jock Market, the app where daily fantasy becomes a stock exchange. Buy and sell shares of players in real time for real money. Download now for a 100% deposit match up to $50 using the promo code GRINDERS. And a guess, if you don't turn a profit this week, Jock Market is running back their first market guarantee to cover your losses this week. So download Jock Market in the app or Play Stores or check out jockmarket.com. That's JOCKMKT.com. And use the code GRINDERS for a 100% deposit match up to $50 on your first deposit. I'm Jordan Cooper, a.k.a. BlenderEd, BlenderHD. If you want to follow me there on Twitter, joined by the man behind the numbers, the models, the dials, the hamster wheels at Advanced Sports Analytics. Stuart Gibson running. This is like kind of a quick week. It feels like, you know, we have Thanksgiving. You know, we have that three-game slate, and a lot of people focus on that three-game slate, and it's like a quick turnaround to, okay, we got 10 games on Sunday. And I want to say it's kind of a weird one for this season. We have 10 games and no team is favored by more than a touchdown. In fact, most are within 3 points and no team has an implied team total over 28. So would you consider, just from an overall view of this slate, that would that mean that would make more teams viable as far as to come in as the top stack on the slate, or is it still just very similar to other weeks, just maybe a little bit, you know, kind of cut off at the top and low ends? Because I could see a lot of options this week.
Yeah, we're getting a handful of teams that are coming in as positive ROI. No any one team standing out as like just a massive kind of clear cut good team to target with regards to ownership, ceiling, correlation, et cetera. I think it's an interesting spot for this because, you know, looking at ownership, it actually looks like we're going to see, as we're like last week, we weren't really projecting huge ownership for any kind of one specific stack or player. I guess it converged that way a little bit with, you know, some running backs and receivers getting rolled out late in the week. But looks like this week we are seeing a handful of guys that are going to project for pretty strong ownership. And I think it is a good week to kind of be diversified, feel comfortable being a bit under on some of these super popular guys, not so much nixing them completely from your player pool. And seeking to get exposure from, I think, well, there is one game that's kind of standing out from a total standpoint. There are kind of a handful of games in this compelling, like 44 to, you know, 49 type range. And does feel like a week where there's probably half a dozen games or so that have a realistic chance at being one of the kind of teams that, you know, an optimal lineup would come through. So I think my inclination, just looking at it now, and like you said, it is a pretty quick turnaround, like, you know, crazy double hamster wheel type week. You know, you got Thursday and the Sunday stuff going. But as we get towards Sunday, I'm expecting to seek out pretty even exposure and kind of balanced across a number of teams, none of which feel like slam dunk kind of comfortable spots, but many of whom feel like they have a real chance at being part of a tournament winning stack.
Do you think that with a lot of the games, with most of the games, if not all of the games, I mean, the largest spread is the Patriots versus the Titans, and that's primarily due to how many players are out for the Titans. Because the spreads are closer, one would think that it makes it more likely that when you do build a lineup, you'd prefer to build the game stack rather than the team stack. Like, I'm going to run it back. Like, these games are more likely to be competitive. But it's also a week where no one individual team total stands out that much dramatically than others. With 10 games on the slate, do you think that if you had to choose between one strategy over the other, as far as construction goes, if you had to choose, obviously there are ways to build lineups of all different types of constructions. I think people will more likely build the game stacks and not necessarily focus on the teams, because none of the teams kind of stand out. But isn't your goal in DFS is to capture the one outlier event that maybe one of these games that are, you know, 2.5, 3-point spread, you know, one team just goes out and destroys the other 42-3. It's the less likely occurrence. But is that one way to limit the amount of things that you have to get right and not end up with, you know, we always see those lineups where, you know, you play the Bills, right? And then you run it back with someone from the other team. It's like, oh, if I just would have played four Bills, like the guy, anyone on the other side of the game only scored like 7 points. Do you think people are going to fall? I don't want to say fall into the trap. But do you think that just because most of these games are close, quote unquote, that doesn't necessarily make it that, you know, oh, you should be game stacking with members of both sides of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I guess my inclination would be to let the spread dictate how, you know, I guess necessary, not necessary, but how comfortable I am with the bring back. And like you said, with so many of these games fairly close, I think my inclination would be to seek to bring a player back from the opposite side. And especially with these game totals relatively low in general, obviously a handful of them are going to go over. I mean, I don't know, maybe they all kind of achieve or fail to achieve total, but just distribute, you know, for on a kind of distribution of probabilities, you would expect that at least a couple of these are going to kind of go over and shoot out. And I guess for that to happen, my sense would be that both teams are kind of pushing one another, just given how close the spread is. So my I think sense would be to try to bring back here in most spots. That would be my lean. I think departing from bringing back a player is usually with these games that have like really high totals or really high spreads or just on super unbalanced sides. But it feels like most of the games here on this slate are project to be pretty tight.
Right. My thinking behind this on the other end of the spectrum is that with no team that has that high of an implied team total, like ridiculous. I mean, yes, we've the Bucks, we'll talk about that game, but then 28 implied team total. Is that there's 10 games on the slate, maybe none of them go over. Like, I mean, significantly enough. I'm not talking about, like, oh, the game that was 47 won 49 points, and that's an over. I'm talking about go significantly over, that it's more important to grab, like, the three or four guy, the one-offs that are the ceiling outcomes than the one game that goes off. Because when we have four games that have, like, 52-plus totals, it's like, well, I'll just stack one of these games and most likely those ceiling scores are coming from these games. But when we only have one game over 50 and most of them are sitting around 45 to 48 type of range, like, isn't the opportunity cost of stacking a game that, you know, if it goes 28 to 24, like, maybe you only get one or two ceiling outcomes out of players from that game. And it's more valuable to be spread out, like, from a one-offs perspective, because there's so many games to target. And that's not because they're all good games to target, is that there's not as many standout games where you could just pinpoint, like, this is where ceilings will come from. We may get one ceiling result out of a 42 total game. We may get one out of a 47 total game. And as long as like the more that you run back your lineups, that means you're occupying slots that those one-offs could entail. I'm asking this question, not saying that there's a correct answer. Like, there is no correct answer. Just, I think the overall narrative, it makes sense in your head from intuitive how the game is played, like how football is played. Oh, they're all close games. So I'm just going to do all run back. So always run it back because it should be close. And it's like, well, what happens if it isn't? What happens if certain games aren't close? And since they are close, who says the underdog is the one that blows out the favorite? I mean, like because it's close, actually, it's higher variance because the team, like, you could take a look and you go, oh, Chargers, Broncos. It's like, oh, I'm going to stack, like, who says the Broncos just don't go out and win 35-10? And like, it's supposed to be a close game, but maybe you play three Broncos and no Chargers, or you play a one-off from one game and a one-off from the other game. And like, I just see that when everything is more even, I think the field assumes that, oh, okay, now I could stack. Like, I want, instead of playing three game stacks, I'm going to play seven game stacks. Instead of thinking in game stacks, say I'm going to play five teams and then have one-offs from like every game on the slate. So it's like, as long as I get those five teams right, even if there's a run back that has like 24 points, I've mixed in all of these one-offs from everywhere else that they may end up in my lineups anyway. So I just like, I think that the field is going to maybe slightly overreact and say, well, I'm just going to, if I play the Rams, I got to play Davante Adams in that lineup, you know, instead of like, well, who says some other 7K, 8K receiver isn't good in another game? And he's the only one that goes off. And it's like now you're pigeonholing yourself because the games are quote unquote close. Like I take a look at, and we'll talk about it, that Rams Packers game. And to me, I view that as the least appealing game on the entire slate. And I think some people may want, like, if you're going to play that game, they're going to start stacking and then you basically use all their money. And it's like, maybe you're just better off just taking one-offs in that game. And once you start thinking like that, like all the games kind of look, a lot of the games look like that of, well, if I do stack this game, I'm like overspending for what is a 46 total or something, or a 47 or 48 total, when maybe it's better off to have a one-off Mike Evans, a one-off Deebo Samuel. So that's kind of the argument that I'm making, where there's no right or wrong. It's just more of like, I don't think this is the type of slate. I don't think any slate is plug it in, always run back with like, it's never like that. But I think people will be more inclined to do it on this slate than others.
Yeah. I will say, like, to me, the kind of avoiding large exposure to uncorrelated one-offs is like more viable on slates where there are teams that you can rule out. Cause you know, if you do want to take like a kind of less game stack, more kind of one-off pick and choose approach, right? Like you naturally are going to have to select from the players that are within play, and those kind of are a function of what teams are within play. And in some weeks, like there are just so many games that we, not so many, but a handful of games that we can kind of just feel comfortable ruling out more or less. And I do think, in this week in particular, there are very few games that to me just seem kind of completely out of play. And you know, with that in mind, like I do think if I am going to take like a very kind of one-off focused or kind of secondary bring back no game stack type approach, I am gonna put, you know, running the risk of being a bit spread out across all these possible games. And fortunately it is like a small slate, so you might not get spread out too much, but you know, it is something to keep in mind.
Well, the top game on the slate, probably going to be the most owned game on the slate, highest total, it opened at 51.5. It's now up to 53. It is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the Colts at home inside the dome. Brady and the Buccaneers have a 28 implied team total, Colts 25 implied team total. We have Godwin at 7K on DraftKings, maybe the highest owned wide receiver on the slate. Jonathan Taylor coming off a monster game. He's up to 9,100 against arguably one of the best rushing defenses in the league. Of course, that didn't stop Jonathan Taylor scoring 5 touchdowns against the Bills, who are one of the top rushing defenses in the league. But I still don't expect Taylor to be that owned. Pittman at 5,600 is going to get some ownership. I see a lot of Brady plus Godwin plus Pittman type lineups. Brady, Godwin, Gronk, right? Pittman type lineups. Maybe some ownership on Fournette. Obviously, you mix in Mike Evans there. To me, Mike Evans at 7,200 versus Godwin at 7,000. Like we currently have, we don't have updated ownership for all of the news that happened today on Friday. But as of this morning, Godwin 29% and Evans at 4%. Like those dramatic splits are always like Godwin is the better projected play, but it should never be a 6-to-1 difference in ownership. So I don't think Evans is going to end up being 4% owned anyway. I think the split's going to be more like Godwin 25, Evans 12, which still is too wide in my opinion, but at least not like 6-to-1 wide. This is going to be the top game stack, most owned game stack. Is the weird thing about this is that outside of like playing Evans instead of Godwin, like how do you play the stack differently? Like if you're playing a Brady or a Wentz team, like do you trust that? Who else would you be in your stack other than Pittman, right? Who else would be? I mean the Jonathan Taylor's a hefty price at 9,100. But I guess you could do it. To me, I almost feel like I'd rather fade the Bucks. I'd almost only because of how they could spread the ball around. I know Antonio Brown is out, but you have Godwin, you get Evans, and you have those the tight ends, which is not just Gronk. They got Braden Howard there. Tyler Johnson will mix in. Scotty Miller may be back. He'll mix in, and Brady has no problem throwing to anyone. So the Buccaneers could put up 35 points. Brady could still have a good game. Fournette could have 2 rushing touchdowns, and you're sitting there with Brady throwing 280 and 3 touchdowns, and all 3 touchdowns go to 3 different people, and like the highest scoring wide receiver has like 18 points. And you're sitting there going, was it worth it? And with the ownership that the Buccaneers are going to have, does that kind of make sense that stacking this? I'd almost rather not play anyone from the game if I'm going to fade it rather. And then if I'm going to play someone from the game, I'd rather. It's one of those games where if the Bucks do well, the Colts probably do well also, like in that scenario that they put up 2 or 3 touchdowns. But if the ball is spread out enough, especially both these teams, you got Pascal, you got the tight ends on the Colts. It just seems like the field may not acknowledge how spread out these offenses could be at times. And with all this ownership getting concentrated to Godwin and Pittman, it doesn't mean I want to play Zach Pascal. Doesn't mean I want to play Cameron Brate or anything like that. But maybe that's how the game gets to a 53 total. But from a DFS perspective, just it's spread out enough that the game kind of fails as a game stack because it's all spread out.
Yeah, we've got positive scores for both these teams. Actually, pretty strong score for Indianapolis. We have Indy stacks appearing in the top 1% of lineups at a 1.76% rate, which.
What do those stacks look like? I mean, what it would be Wentz, Pittman, what? I mean, what?
Yeah, so like Wentz, Pittman, Mo Alie-Cox, Nyheim Hines, Pascal, just I guess sprinklings of these guys that don't project well but are very cheap and essentially a touchdown for many of these guys. And Hines, I guess he doesn't really have much rushing touchdown equity at this point. They're using Taylor almost exclusively at the goal line. But yeah, a receiving touchdown for many of these guys, could vault them into tournament winning contention. Probably more like medium sized tournaments. I don't know that they have quite kind of the raw upside needed for a large field tournament, but small to medium tournaments, which is what for what it's worth, like that's what we're simulating on. We're simulating on a 12,000 person tournament as opposed to like the massive Millie Makers. And then I think also single stacks are relevant. Wentz, Pittman, and if you have Pittman, probably avoiding like another high ownership guy like Godwin. But I think Evans makes a ton of sense as kind of the lower projected but lower ownership play. I think that's kind of what those positive stacks might look like.
And the running backs are a natural negative correlation to the ownership of those stacks. Like if Taylor and Fournette or Fournette have big games, it's almost definitely coming out of the the ceilings of the higher owned players, right? If Taylor has three touchdowns, you know, Pittman's not going to have a snowflake. And I'd much rather play Fournette, because Fournette catches balls out of the backfield. So I think his ceiling, I mean, obviously Taylor does also, but he's 9,100 for crying out loud. So I could see myself on DraftKings playing a lot of Fournette and less of Godwin and just playing them as standalones. Just go, maybe the running backs get there. Leonard Fournette has 100 yards rushing, two touchdowns. That'll take away from Brady. That'll take away from Godwin, Gronk, Evans, all those guys. It almost feels like I'd rather play Fournette as a one-off than play Godwin as a one-off. It feels like at his ownership, that he's probably going to be the most high-owned wide receiver, that we have plenty of guys in his price range, that why do I want to play a 25 to 30% off one-off 7K wide receiver in a game that I believe the other players in the game are much more correlated to each other?
Yeah. Would you feel comfortable with like a Fournette Pittman bring back? I guess.
Well, obviously, I mean, Pittman's owned also. I mean, the problem in this game is that the two best pieces are both high owned. It's not one of these games where one guy is high owned and then the other side of the game kind of is even ownership, right? You get like, okay, well, this guy's going to be 15% owned. This guy's going to be 13% owned. This guy's going to be 10% owned. It's kind of like, nope, Godwin, Pittman. That's what people would like. If you're going to run it back with anyone on the Colts, it's going to be Pittman, right? Like,
yeah.
So how do I end up, if I play Fournette, all I'm doing is I'm just adding a high owned player with Pittman. It's like, I could have just played Godwin as a one-off at that point, right?
Yeah, but I don't expect Fournette to be quite the same ownership kind of relative to his positional group as Godwin.
Yeah, right? But my attitude is that if Pittman hits a ceiling, the game is more likely to be shooting out more, which gives the ceiling to Godwin, which I don't have in my line. Like the whole point of rostering the running backs is that the running backs suck the life out of the game.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess my feeling with like Fournette, you know, just given the pass game role that he has, like I could see him getting value without like, yeah, grinding out the game, you know, slowing down the game in a massive way. You know, if he kind of just vultures touchdowns at the goal line and is productive in the pass game role.
I'm not against it. I'm just saying that the whole purpose of me rostering a running back in this game is to play the game while fading the game. But I mean, it's obvious that the best pairing is Godwin and Pittman, and playing one of the quarterbacks in the game. We're not saying that projected wise that is the best thing to do. But our goal in GPP is not to play the highest projected lineups. It's to play the most profitable lineups. And I think that on the current ownership, I think this game is going to be overowned.
Got it. Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. I think, like I said, getting positive scores from us, but it is going to be, yeah, very, very high ownership because it's just, yeah, so clearly kind of the highest total game.
Okay, so other games on the slate, what other games on this 10-game slate would you consider to be a plus, meaning that you believe that the game stack is above expectation compared to its ownership?
Yeah, so I have one game with both teams showing up as pretty good positive scores. That's Philadelphia at the Giants. Just one of these middling total games. You know, there's kind of a half dozen or so in kind of the 44 to 46 range. The Eagles kind of skew run heavy, so it's not like a conventionally great spot where like I kind of expect both these teams to be playing super, super fast or anything. But we have it scoring as kind of a positive expectation spot. Both quarterbacks have rushing upside, which I think is always kind of a nice plus. So that's a spot that I'm looking to.
I agree with you. This is one of my plus spots also. Based on Daniel Jones' last game, I think people are going to definitely stay away from him. We got a bunch of injuries on the Giants side. Every week with the Giants, there's always like two guys injured, and it's always two different guys. So we've got news today that that Shepard is out. Tony is doubtful. Barkley is questionable. But what this does is just it eliminates players that you have to play with this. I prefer the Giant side of this. I prefer Jones, Galladay, Engram, or Slayton, something like that. You could also pair Jones with Barkley. Barkley's cheap enough. He's 6,300. He will catch balls out of the backfield if he does play. He's questionable. And then you run it back with either Sanders or Goddard, right? Rager should be back. So that'll take away some, you know, like Quez Watkins and Devonta Smith. I mean, Devonta Smith is overpriced at 6,400, but he definitely has a ceiling. So I have no problem playing him. But I think Goddard should be on DraftKings is going to be one of the higher owned tight ends. But I really don't care about tight end ownership. But he's more likely going to be owned as a solo one-off. Like, it's not like, oh, well, Goddard's going to be owned. That means all these other guys are going to be like, no, just people playing a one-off tight end. So by playing Barkley opposite or Galladay opposite Goddard, it like mitigates that ownership a little bit. But yeah, but understand though, Stewart, I view this game as a high variance game as far as pace is concerned. But those typically the ones that I'm looking to target, where this game could be mistake prone teams, short fields, and you know, someone makes a mistake and it's a 70-yard touchdown. This game could also be like the Eagles running the ball 70% of the time with a lead, and the game grinds to nothing. Daniel Jones, it's three and out, interception, fumble, and the game is like, you know, Philadelphia, the Eagles win 27-10, or not even, 17-10, and no one gets there. But compared to its ownership, I'm more likely to take a shot that maybe these two teams do play well enough and efficiently enough and not as slow-paced on the Eagles side that it does go over.
Yeah, I think for me, kind of the perfect scenario for the game is Barkley doesn't play. The Giants still get out to an early lead, but because I think really the Eagles side is concerning. They can be really run heavy at times, and I think the floor kind of outcome for this game is probably tied more to a Eagles victory than it is to a Giants victory. Naturally, I tend to like, except for, you know, teams like Tampa Bay, Buffalo, and Kansas City. Like, I think teams playing from behind can be good. But, you know, I could see circumstances where if Barkley's out, the Giants still might skew more pass heavy, even if they're ahead, just given kind of the personnel they have. So that injury will be something to keep an eye on. It's interesting. Like, usually we have kind of a handful of teams that we tag as like high variance games. It feels like, many of these games, well, I think the ones that I'm quite interested in, there's really three that I have pegged as like high variance games. I think this is a week where kind of the high variance games are appealing. And I would like to just kind of take a shots on a smattering of these games. And
okay. So what are the other two?
So I have in no particular order, but I see Houston Jets as high variance, and I see Atlanta, Jacksonville as high variance, and
okay,
and a third being Minnesota and San Francisco. Like, I think all four of these games are high variance. There's realistic routes though to all of them, going over in meaningful ways.
Okay, so would you consider them all to be pluses?
As I look through my stuff, yeah, I mean, I have like San Francisco side tagged as a plus. Houston side tagged as a plus, although I think Houston could get a good bit of ownership. I'm seeing, I know you guys have pretty high ownership on Cooks and Tyrod Taylor.
We have in this game, just to go over, we'll go it slowly one by one for a little sure. bit. I mean, to me, the Jets Houston game is easy. Like, Tyrod Taylor, Brandon Cook, Corey Davis is the run back, and you're done, right? I mean, like, maybe you could play Elijah Moore instead. I mean, it's the Texans and the Jets. But like you said, it's a high variance spot because it's two crappy teams, and they could be crappy in two different ways. Crappy by inefficient offenses or crappy by inefficient defenses, right? So it's like this game, when two bad teams face each other, this game could be 38-35. It could also be 10-3, right? I mean, it could be that. Based on the ownership that I see currently, to me, Brandon Cooks is one of those guys that you play when he's low owned and you fade when he's high owned. And if Brandon Cooks is getting ownership this week, 20%+, that just automatically makes me go like, I'll just X out this game and just hope two bad teams just don't do much.
Yeah. Yeah, we have, I'm just looking at our ownership ratios, and we have kind of meaningful gaps between Taylor and Cooks in ownership. And yeah, I think that makes like a lot of sense. If our simulations had Taylor and Cooks at the level you guys have, I could see this, yeah, that being a real big pivot on how this game sims out. And that might change as kind of the week goes on. And I have to update tonight for injuries anyways. And we'll see kind of how ownership projections and our simulations come out with that game. But yeah, I'm seeing at the levels you guys have, I mean, Taylor is, well, I think, one of the top five quarterbacks, top five ownerships at QB, and Cooks is, I remember, quite high also, probably top like five top or five. So. Yeah. Like that. It's like high, you know, we have typically talked on the show about high variance in kind of a good way. But when you get high amounts of ownership on high variance, it's potentially a good spot to essentially roll the dice on all of that ownership just getting completely busted on variance going the negative way. We've mostly talked about being on under-owned high variance games at the opportunity to get, you know, exposure to kind of the positive variant outcome. I can see where projected ownership is going to make, I think, a big difference on how you view this game.
Right. And also with all the news that's coming out even today, possibly tomorrow, like these ownership numbers are going to change somewhat. I mean, like especially on the short week. I'm not talking about short week for the football team, it's a short week for DFS content. Like a lot of people that consume content, like they've consumed stuff for Thanksgiving. Isn't that like we get a lot of times on a normal week of DFS where people like by on Tuesday are already like kind of anchoring to certain players and certain teams. And then as the week goes on, it's like, you know, kind of that ownership gets a little bit like a little bit encrusted into the consciousness. And then stuff happens Friday and Saturday and that kind of moves. Here, it almost feels like on a Friday afternoon, it feels like we're doing the show on like what it would be a Wednesday on a normal week, where it's like, I'm not really, we have projected ownership, but I'm not necessarily sure where a lot of the, you know, the subjective psychological bias is going to go, because most people have been focusing on Thanksgiving than on this slate. The game that I have to target the highest, and it's not going to be an unpopular game, but I think I think it's as good as Tampa Bay, Indianapolis, but won't be as high owned. Like, so it's still going to be owned, and that's going to be Chargers Broncos playing Justin Herbert plus Allen, Williams, Cook, Eckler. And you could even, I don't know about the Bridgewater side, but I mean, you have cheaper pieces. You have Judy, you have Fant, you have Sutton. They got to spread the ball around. You could play Javonte Williams, 5,200 at running back. Just that, to me, the Chargers side is much more condensed than the Broncos side. So with it being much more condensed, that's where I'm going to stack with two guys. I mean, Jared Cook, sometimes he gets there and sometimes he, but if you're going to stack Herbert, I just think the Herbert stack, people are going to gravitate to Godwin, gravitate to Pittman, play Brady, you know, that type of thing. And while Herbert stands to be one of the higher owned quarterbacks, I Keenan Allen will be owned, but I'm not sure about anyone else on the team. And I have no problem playing Herbert with Eckler, playing Herbert, Eckler, Williams, and without Keenan Allen, and then just rotating in anyone you want on the Denver side. And this is one of those games that I was talking about in the very beginning of the opportunity cost. Is it possible for the Chargers, the Broncos, to score three or four touchdowns and none of their players get there because it's all spread out. But the Chargers are so much more condensed that maybe I don't have, maybe I have lineups without any Broncos. Maybe I have three Chargers, no Broncos. And it's not because I think the Chargers are going to blow them out. It's just that maybe Judy scores a touchdown and then Cortland Sutton scores a touchdown and Fant scores a touchdown. Melvin Gordon has a touchdown. Like, everyone's spread out. And it's like, okay, who's your highest scoring player on the Broncos? It's Cortland Sutton with 16 points. And it's like, which it's doable. Yeah, I mean, that could still be in the winning lineup, but it may not be necessary. Yet if the Chargers score four or five touchdowns, like, I could identify pretty much who that's going to be. And just, like, let me play three of those guys.
Yeah. I think it's a very projectable lineup. I mean, Keenan Allen, Herbert is got to, I mean, it's going to be one of the most owned, if not the most owned QB wide receiver combinations, don't you think?
Well, that's what do you think I'm talking about? Not play, you play Eckler and Williams, you play Williams and Cook. Like, there are ways to play this.
Okay.
I don't know what I think that Brady plus Godwin will be higher owned than Herbert plus Allen. It may not even say that in our current numbers, but I think Tampa Bay Indianapolis game is the highest owned game on the slate. And with people playing Pittman or Godwin, it'll just make more lineups have Brady or Wentz in it more so than people don't want to play Keenan Allen. Right? People like, he's there.
Yeah.
He's 7,400. I'm fine with playing Keenan Allen. But people look, Keenan Allen and Chris Godwin are virtually the same type of receiver. Yet people view Godwin as like, well, he's not a low A dot. Like, no, they're the same type of receiver. But people view Keenan Allen as this eight-yard, A-dot, no-touchdown type of receiver. It's like, if you go to Godwin, he's pretty much the same type of receiver, but people want to play him more. And I just think there are more Chargers that are going to be lower-owned. Like I said before, in our ownership with Evans, we currently have his 4%. He ain't going to be 4%. He's going to be like 12 to 15%. So I see Keenan Allen's ownership more likely to come down to 20% than Godwin's coming down to 20% and Herbert coming down to like 12%. And it's like, I think Brady plus Godwin is like 15 plus 28 and Herbert plus Allen is more like 12 plus 20, which still makes them, like I said, it's not like this game, it's not like the Chargers aren't going to be owned. I just think that the Chargers stacks are, because of how more condensed that offense is more valuable to me than a Tampa offense that Brady could throw four touchdowns to four different people. And like Brady may have as high of a score as Herbert. It's just that the pass catchers that go along with Herbert also have ceilings while the Bucs guys may not.
Yeah, that makes sense. We've got a decent score on the Denver side. You raised kind of the strongest point with Denver is that they are potentially, you know, spread out now that they got kind of all these guys healthy, you know, Judy back in the mix. I am potentially interested though in the Denver side a little bit, you know, going with Sutton or Judy. I do like Javonte Williams a decent bit. In general, though, I think this is a game my preference would be to be under on, just given the numbers that we currently have. I suppose if you are going to kind of go the Los Angeles side, I do like the Eckler-Herbert combo. That's been kind of a running back QB combo that I've been playing a good bit this year, and it has it's gotten off to a good start in a few games, but has yet to, at least the weeks that I've played it, like really hit in a big way. What's your interest in, I'm just looking kind of at prices, and Mike Williams has been on kind of like a escalator up, elevator down as far as pricing goes. You know, it seems like
5,700, I'll play him. Give it to me.
Yeah.
I wasn't playing him at 7,600, but at 5,700, I'll do it.
Yeah. Earlier this year, I think, you know, people were licking their chops at or would have licked their chops at kind of a cheap Mike Williams, but he got priced up pretty quickly. But now he's fallen back down, and you know, his role has been on a bit of a decline, but that could be, I think, a viable spot.
You said one of the games that you had as a plus, I have as a minus, is the Falcons Jaguars game.
Okay.
Okay. What are your thoughts on this game? Because, like, I don't think it projects well, and I mean, really, do you want to play Matt Ryan and Trevor Lawrence? I mean, like,
yeah,
I guess I see, like, the Jaguars is like, I can understand playing James Robinson. I can understand maybe playing a Jacksonville receiver one off, but to pair these guys together, based on the projections that I'm seeing currently, it doesn't stand out as to me. I view the Jaguars as they could throw to 8 different people. Why am I taking Trevor Lawrence? Then I look at the Falcons, and all I know that this season is anytime you trust the Falcons, your bankroll disappears. So, like, like, they don't even project that well either. Like, other than maybe Kyle Pitts, maybe Patterson if he's back, but I never like really playing that guy. Like, yeah. What do you find so appealing about this game?
So I'm looking at like our simulation score now, and they're showing up super great. But I think like Jacksonville is just a defense that I like to attack. No Ridley. So I think, you know, Atlanta's offense can project to be a bit more condensed around like Pitts and Gage. The game has a respectable total. You know, I think both defenses can be exploitable. So that's kind of what I was looking at. Mostly seeing Jacksonville as a defense to attack, and especially with a more condensed offense than usual.
Is it really that condensed? They throw to Zacchaeus, Tajay Sharp. They got multiple running backs. Patterson, because also when Patterson plays, he comes out of anywhere. I mean, like he's a anywhere position guy. I don't know. I'm not big on this game, but I mean, it's not going to be high owned. So I mean, like for the ownership that these guys are going to come in, I taking a shot is no problem. I mean, we have Agnew out, so maybe Laviska Shenault finally does something. But all I know is that anytime you play Laviska Shenault, he plays on 98% of the snaps and gets 2 touches.
Yeah, he's been painful to roster this year. The last game that I have as a plus, and I kind of want to dig more into our numbers, but the San Francisco side of the, you know, that game, I think is appealing. Like Minnesota has just very natural bringbacks. I think, what are we scoring Minnesota? We don't have a great score on Minnesota as a side to stack, but, you know, certainly going either one of Jefferson or Thielen as a bringback, or, you know, just really strong. Like Minnesota, I think is a very compelling team to stack against week in and week out, just given their defense, given the, you know, bring back option of Jefferson Thielen. You know, San Francisco can always be a bit concerning just given the rate at which they run the ball. But, you know, certainly have talented receivers in Samuel and Kittle. You know, Ayuk's role has been expanding a decent bit in recent weeks, but certainly like Kittle and Samuel look pretty compelling to me. The price is way up on Debo, so I'm not expecting him to get like a ton of ownership. That's a side that we have pegged actually is pretty strong in our simulations.
Right. I agree with you on the 49ers side. The problem that I have in this game is that any run back you have is expensive. Like, I prefer Thielen over Jefferson, even though obviously Jefferson has the higher ceiling. It's just that once you pair Garoppolo, Debo, Kittle, well, you're going to run it back with Justin Jefferson, 8,300, then good luck. You're going to have to look under your couch cushions to find the rest of your salary for your lineup. So, like, this is one of those games, like I said before, maybe you don't play the Vikings run back at all. You just play the San Francisco sack because of the pricing on the other side. So like I'm with you on the 49ers side, and the Vikings side is going to be low on. I mean, it's not like they're going to be owned. It's just that from a pricing perspective, what is the opportunity cost of rostering Justin Jefferson as a run back in the San Francisco stack than rostering another $8,300 level player from some other game? I mean, from somewhere else that ends up, you know, getting there or whatever. So like, to me, that's the whole, my whole thesis from the beginning is more for games like this and games like the Rams Packers game. I'm interested to see what you have for this, because I have this as literally the lowest ranked game stack of the entire slate. Some ownership's going to go to Adams. Some ownership's going to go to Henderson. If AJ Dillon, if Aaron Jones is out and AJ Dillon is in, obviously he's in. If Jones is out, he'll be owned. But just from a price perspective, like how the hell do you stack? Cooper Kupp's 9,600. Davante Adams is 8,600. It's going to be one of those things where this is going to be the game that gets there. These teams typically, when these teams hit ceilings, it's when the pack, like the Rams, these are applied team totals. Rams 24.25, Packers 22.75. Normally we play the Packers when they have a 28 or 29 team total. We play the Rams when they have a 28 to 30 team total. Now we're paying more for these players. Yes, it's a closer game, but how do you stack this game with essentially playing like half the salary for your lineup into like three or four players?
Yeah, we have the Packers as the lowest lowest grading out team. So I'm just looking at the propensity of Green Bay stacks that are appearing in the top 1%. You know, on a fully kind of balanced slate, every team would appear 1% of the time. Obviously things are unbalanced. So any team that appears higher than 1% good, any team lower than 1% bad, we have Packers lineups accounting for 0.58%. So about half of the expected value under kind of full efficiency. It's just expensive, low total. The Packers are slow, run heavy, Rams good defense. The price is preventatively high as kind of a total stack. It makes a lot of sense. We have the Rams not quite towards the basement, but kind of around like the bottom third percentile. I don't know, not quartile, not I don't know what a third, whatever, but bottom 33%, I guess, of stack. So yeah, with you in that, it just seems like a pretty unappealing spot from a stacking standpoint. Certainly, you know, talented teams, there's potential for any one of these guys to be viable one-offs, but from a game stack, with you on this one as a minus.
What are your thoughts before we get out of here on Carolina? Cam Newton may be, like, if you're playing cash games this week on DraftKings, he may be the most owned cash game quarterback because of his rushing upside, and he's 5,600. For the Panthers are favored, but this is the lowest total game on the entire slate. Do you think that we have the ownership of McCaffrey and DJ Moore as fairly high, and they do project well, but do you really see the upside? I see the upside on Cam, but do you see the upside on Ken Cam at 5,600 plus McCaffrey at 9,000 plus DJ Moore at 6,200 all get to a ceiling? It almost seems like any touchdown that gets scored hurts any of the other one of the other guys, that you'd rather play Cam naked, or you'd rather play McCaffrey one off, or you'd rather play Moore as the one off and hope Cam doesn't vulture a rushing touchdown either. Right. Maybe you could play Cam plus more, but it just seems like at McCaffrey's price at 9,000, you'd want a 35 plus point ceiling. Cam Newton's in there. I guess they both can get there, but not at a 42 game total. Am I really going to want to play three Panthers in my lineup?
Yeah, I'm with you. This feels like a preventatively low game total. And, I don't even think you're going to get them at like a huge ownership discount. I don't think like a ton of people are going to go to, you know, Cam, McCaffrey, Moore stacks, but I think it'll be a lot more than people going to, going to like a Denver stack or going to, San Francisco or Philadelphia or New York stack. really Giants or Jets. I think like, yeah, I would just rather go with these teams that are going to be lower owned, higher game total. I think just overall better game environment. So we have pretty strong negative grades on both Carolina and Miami. This is probably the only game that I feel comfortable just like fully Xing out from a stacking standpoint. Considering teams to stack, I don't really want any part of either of these sides from a stacking standpoint.
Right. So you're not going to make the super duper Newton, McCaffrey, Moore, Gaskin, Waddle lineup.
No, not on a 41 game total. I think that's and it's like not even at no ownership, you know, it'd be like, I don't know, if the total crept up over the course of the weekend and some other games came down and, you know, you could project, you know, a lot of ownership from McCaffrey, but no Moore, no Newton, no Waddle type ownership. But like, I think these guys are going to get fairly owned. Again, you know, could make for fine one-offs. I think, there are a few game totals that are incapable of supporting any, fantasy life, but certainly 41.5 when we have a pretty much every game is in like the 44 plus range, just doesn't really feel like that can support, full game stack or even really stacking a single side.
Anything else of note on the slate?
Just like Pittsburgh is kind of a small minus. I don't think they're going to get a ton of ownership. That's mostly just going to be like, I think it will get a lot of Deontay Johnson one-offs, but I can't imagine there'll be too much. People really like Cincinnati. And I think, you know, you can see people trying to talk themselves into like Ben Johnson, bring back one of the receivers type thing. And, I don't know. Cincinnati is a team that, from a stacking standpoint, I've been under for most of the season. I think probably want to continue to be that way. Been under Cincinnati and teams that have played them. They just can play really slow. And their receivers like always project well from a median standpoint, but just given their pace, it just hasn't been like a super fruitful stack, a team to stack so far this year.
So people could find out all these stats and interesting insights in your Substack at advancedsportsanalytics.com.
Yeah, correct. Follow us on Twitter, and that's where we'll be, tweeting out, I guess, the links to the stack, whether you're a subscriber to the Substack or to the site, either or will get you access to that. And we'll release that tomorrow. Just have to, like you said, today feels like a Wednesday, and I think just catching up on kind of the injury news and notes, want to make sure we kind of have the current state of things heading into the weekend for our simulations and kind of the article that's derived from that. So keep an eye out for that sometime tomorrow morning.
And that's on Twitter at AS Analytics DFS. You can follow Stewart himself, Stark Gibson. Follow me on Twitter at BlenderHD. And feel free to like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. And if you're listening on the RotoGrinders Fantasy Football feed, go to iTunes, rate and review. It's always appreciated. So until next time, there's been another edition of the Advanced Sports Analytics Show here on RotoGrinders.com.